Welcome to the Arcademia podcast. It's our very first podcast, so please bear with us. Today we'll be letting you know all about our platform, be introducing you to the guys that have invented it, which is myself, Mr. Jack Johnson, Mr. Adam Morgan, I'm Kenny McNaughton. And we'll be...
What is that voice?
I will slip back into my natural accent at some point. And we'll be telling you what's going to come forth on all of the future podcasts, getting into why we started Arcademia, little Q&A, and a top three segment at the end. So, gents, to kick us off, give us a little introduction to Arcademia as a platform and what it is.
Do you want me to go first? Yeah. No, so it's a platform primarily to bridge the gap between university and practice. But that doesn't mean that more senior architects couldn't use it, because that gap might never have been filled, you know. So that's the reason for the origins of it, just to mainly to bridge that gap. But it's also a place where it's a one-stop shop for tutorials at the very least. It's a place where you have access to downloads to see behind the curtain. That was something that me and Jack always struggled with at uni, was we had very little access to practices and the other the real content that you needed to sort of to thrive in your future career.
And it just gives you access to architects. That's something we really lacked when we were in university. Architects, in effect, are on a pedestal when you're in university. It's only when you get out of university you realise they're all dopes. But when you're in uni, just being able to bounce ideas off an architect is valuable, really. And it's sort of born out of that, the platform first and foremost. But then as business owners, when we take on new starters, we were getting asked the same core questions every time. Like, how do you do this in SketchUp? How do you do this in AutoCAD? So rather than repeating ourselves quite a lot, we just started recording our screens, and Arcademia in its earliest days was born out of that effectively.
Yeah, it's almost like a training platform for the architects that we have coming through it.
And that's what it started as, and then it's obviously evolving all the time into so much more.
Yeah. Something that we should touch on for the audience is the three of us have been friends for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So I think it's over 15 years now we've been friends for.
We met at uni, didn't we?
Yeah, met at uni. And we now own an architecture practice in Liverpool called Studio RBA, based in the Royal Albert Dock there. And it's been going very well for the last 5 years. We are now 5 years old. And this was something that was born out of, it even helped me train initially when I come on board at RBA. You guys created some tutorials on SketchUp for me, which I was able to learn and then help the business with some of our visuals and stuff. So just a little bit about our background, yeah, is that we have been friends a long time. We have got a successful business that has a good reputation now in Liverpool. And that this is something that has been born out of some difficulties that we've seen in the industry with architects and just with some software and proficiencies just in general.
Well, I'm sorry to think, yeah, but you know, we've mentioned software there, but obviously one of the main purposes as well is to give advice on the software. This is the reason why we're doing a podcast, obviously, but there are lessons on there in both the video training and the actual downloadable content that gives advice on all the other skills as well,
yeah,
beyond software. And I know we're going to touch on this in a minute, but arguably that is the difference, isn't it? The, you know, I suppose you can learn the software in many ways, but there is no one teaching how to become an architect.
Yeah, that difference between student life and practice life is big. So just to give everybody listening a bit of more of an overview, a bit of a background about yourselves. So you guys went to university together. Obviously, that's where we all met. But just to give everybody, give yourselves a bit of credibility with the audience listening, where you guys qualified and your job history to now.
Can you go first this time?
So obviously, as mentioned, we met in university, John Morse University in Liverpool. Then part one, I studied in Nightingale Associates, which were a global healthcare architect specialising in healthcare and schools.
I'm surprised, only because I'm surprised he hasn't led with the story of day one and John Moores when he made the show of Adam. Well, that's what I thought he was going to do.
That's Adam's story, to be fair.
He
made a tit of himself.
No, you
not
made
me.
A tit of me.
But anyway, go on.
Yeah, so I suppose we'll get into that in a minute. Now that you've killed me, chain.
But, no, but go on. So part one, you work for like a healthcare-led practice,
massive company in Liverpool city centre, like 50-plus staff. Then I wanted something different for part two, so went back to John Moores, but I then worked for a smaller practice, and I just found I wasn't pigeonholed as much in a really small practice. I was, in effect, just thrown into the deep end. So a small local practice, 6 to 8 staff varying across the time I was there. And then organically, we sort of started RBA then, myself and Adam, because it just made sense. We were getting lots of extracurricular outside work.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where we had as much work as outside of work as in work. So the practice grew from there. I have missed out that we qualified in 2013, was it? The par three, we done that out of Chester, Reba Northwest.
It's near 10 years now,
yeah, so we've been qualified just touching 10 years now, myself and Adam. So I'll hand it back to you.
So, you know, obviously similar start to Jack with the traditional route of uni. You probably get to know this, I'm not the most well-read architect there is. And I got the architect wrong for our own cathedral. And Jack reminded everyone about good 100 there. 100 strong cohort.
Just to pair it back, this was the very first time we met, wasn't it?
Very first time we met.
Couldn't have got off to a worse start, to be honest.
No,
but here we are.
No,
to be fair, I seen it as I was trying to save him because he was doing a presentation on the Anglican, on the Metropolitan Cathedral. And he was talking about the architect who built the Anglican. I thought, everyone's onto this. I need to just like...
In reality, it was probably just you who was onto it.
No. To be fair, everyone probably was onto
everyone
it.
Everyone knows locally who'd done the two cathedrals.
So then I started with Rory, who's obviously one of our colleagues. And I said to Rory, I'll never get on with him. and then we got put in a group together. And We actually hit it off. We do genuinely wish we had academia at our disposal. That's why it exists. But in the main, we got along because we came from a very similar background and we had, you know, very similar kind of aspirations in our career. And we always said that we'd start a practice together. And that's kind of where the name RBA comes from, because we had a rubbish name of Red Brick Architects. That sounds like you just do social housing. So we've used RBA as an acronym, and then we just changed we change what it means daily, don't we?
But at the time, we thought it was the best name in the world.
We thought Red Brick Architects was like,
we're going to call a practice that one day. That's amazing.
Yeah.
When you're young and enthusiastic, every idea is a good idea.
But also when we did arrive in uni, we got a massive shock, didn't we? The step up from sixth form to that first week in uni was a shock. Like, everyone's going out to Freshers Week, and we're like, let's go out. And we just got given work upon work. And we didn't have a Freshers Week.
There's not much of a social. I'm not saying no, but there's not.
Yeah. You just get your head down for like the first 2 months, and then you look up and it's Christmas.
I think maybe make a note somewhere. I think we save the meat of that for an episode, actually, because that is such an important point, isn't it? The difference between your secondary education, even college, some went to college, in between, and you go to university, the expectation from tutors for your level of commitment is an absolute eye-opener.
Yeah. Oh,
if you're not in the studio till 7-8 at night, you're considered lazy.
Yeah, and you've got to just also factor in that it is one of the, I think, top three most difficult degrees that you can do, you know, the amount of time it takes, the amount of expertise you have to cover off as an architect, which, you know, you learn more about that again when you get into practice life as well. So we'll definitely cover an episode, I think, on that, you know, just that university journey and how difficult it is.
So make a mental note of that.
That one will come up a few episodes time.
So going back to the background. So obviously, you know, what we're trying to establish here is that me and Jack are from massive practice backgrounds. So Jack was Nightingale, now RBI. And my first job in architecture was a BDP, one of the country's biggest. And I spent 6 months on Liverpool One, which was absolutely amazing. Another few months.
You designed it, didn't you?
Yeah, well, that's what I said. You know what? This is a funny story. Actually, you know what I did do? You know what I actually did do? Someone fell off the steps where the step meets a ramp. Someone fell off that and sued BDP, or went to sue BDP. Yeah. And I actually drew the studs. So there's little metal studs now in front of him. The golf one at the other end and the burger gaff at the other end,
yeah.
Those studs were me on a £1 billion scheme. But anyway,
Every little helps.
And I did, no, but I actually did work quite meaningfully on the elevations for Aintree Racecourse and a few other bits and bobs. So that big practice background helps us massively. And then I went, and then similar to Jack, we actually realised that we didn't learn a lot at big practice in part one. So we went back, done our masters, done quite well. We got whatever the one below a distinction was, but we were both robbed.
We didn't have academia, did we?
No, exactly. But then we realised that actually, or me personally anyway, I didn't develop enough on my part one. Mm. So I took a step back. I actually went down. I got a first in me degree and went down a level when I got to my masters.
Yeah.
And I think I suffered because of the big practice. You know, I didn't, even though I was involved in those schemes, the level of involvement is minimal. So then me and Jack then sort to work at smaller practices. And weirdly enough, Jack was A2 and I was K2, which is pure fluke. A wonderful time, a K2 architect for 6-7 years. And as Jack said, it naturally got to a point, and it did, you know, this would be my advice to anyone if they want to set up, is you can build a client base in the background. And we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it wasn't deliberate. We didn't try and poach any clients that couldn't practice. I'd never advise that. But what we did do was we still impressed enough people. We gained enough of a network and what have you, where other developers within that network, not clients of that practice, but just developers in that network, they started to approach us. And that's why we arrived at Studio RBA, because we were rushed into forming a business name, weren't we?
Yeah.
Because we had to have a limited company that we could then put PI against.
Yeah.
So that's why we just had to quickly. One of my favorite practices is Studio O&A. And there's a little bit of inspiration there. Yeah. So Studio RBA and away we go.
Well, one of the key things of why we started to win so much work outside of our jobs was the ability that you guys have, particularly in CGIs and visual work. So yeah. A lot of architects, as standard, a lot of practices, they don't offer CGI services and animation services, which is, again, where you guys have excelled in adding those extra strings to your bow, if you like, and really, really excelling in it, so that you've been able to bring in clients outside of the usual architecture work and then build a client base.
Well, we've won big developer clients where it started as a CGI commission, didn't it? Exactly. And it moved into the architecture when they realised.
The business was probably born out of CGIs, if we're being honest, wasn't it?
That's it.
Well, obviously Edwin. Yeah.
And sorry to cut in, we did actually have a CGI company in uni, didn't we, which we didn't mention.
Oh, yeah. So we had the usual weekend job when we were paying our way through uni first time round, but second time round we actually started a CGI company to pay our way second time round. Did we ever... I don't think we ever done... Way for one of the tutors, Ian, did we? But we got inquiries.
Yeah.
Because some of the tutors were practicing
we
architects.
We worked for BDP London, to be fair.
We did. Bloody hell, yeah, we did. Yeah.
What a lesson for people in university in terms of choose your friends carefully, because if you can build a good team, even in university, and you can get on together well, you can do stuff like this. You know,
I don't want to get too emotional, but I wouldn't have passed my part three if it weren't for Jack as well.
Exactly.
Because we had each other to you know, basically... You know, again, we were saying we bought a creative, and we're telling, we've got a couple of guys in the office who are working towards the part three now, and we're saying to them, you need to just get a crate of Coca noodles.
Yeah.
That's not product placement. Get a crate of that and just work every evening you can, really get into contracts, get into all stuff that's required. But that is a mighty difficult thing to do on your own. Yeah. So you're absolutely spot on there.
Maybe we'll get a sponsorship from Coca Noodles.
You know what?
Can we make them pop up on the screen?
I'd absolutely love that. Yeah.
Just a quick one, just to touch on, you mentioned two projects there that you worked on, particularly Adam, which were really big ones for our city, but you know, the audience might not fully be aware of them. So Liverpool One. Just touch on that a little, just really quickly and just explain the size of that development, what it done for our city. And
Yeah. Well, and also what it done for my own mentality with drawing. I still draw the exact same way today, you know, from what I learned from that. But in terms of what it meant for the city, there was a massive disconnect between the Albert Dock, which was tabled for getting flattened at one point, which is insane. We're working in, obviously, and absolutely ridiculous. That was abandoned. And then there was this massive gap, which was just a horrendous, there was a horrendous hotel, the Moat House, I think it was called, wasn't it? And a bus station. And we had this stunning waterfront that was being underutilised. And Liverpool won. It was a £1 billion project. And it basically connected the bulk of the city centre to the waterfront. Now, the timing of it, I forget whether, I think it was around Capital Culture,
it was,
wasn't it?
I think that's where we got the funding from. I think it was, we won Capital Culture as a city and the funding come through for obviously this billion.
Capital
pound.
Of Culture 2008.
And I think it completed in 2008 because that was when I started my career. Worst time to start your career. Massive crash. I ended up working on jobs in Moscow, funny enough, because BDP is a global company as well as one of the biggest in the UK. And I suppose that's another topic, resilience, isn't it? Stuff like that. But yeah, so Liverpool won, £1 billion project, massive. And BDP were the master planner. And then I think they worked on a handful of buildings within it, but they became like an executive architect for other architects who then were commissioned to do the one-off buildings. That's how I know so much about the story behind some of them.
Yeah.
Cesar Pelle, absolutely amazing Brazilian architect, I think. And he done the One Park West one at the front. And sadly, it's not half the building it was meant to be because it was just cutting off.
Yeah.
It was just cutting off by the planners.
And it's evident in the proportion of it, isn't it?
It's got no... Yeah, well, and obviously you're massive on that, aren't you? It's got no proportion now because it's just been chopped in half.
Yeah.
And an Aintree Racecourse, yeah. It was the new... I forget the name of it now, but it's
Earl
a stand.
Of Sefton.
It's the big glass one. It's the big glass one.
There's two new stands.
And I did
erected,
even in my part one, which was good, under the tutelage of obviously your senior technicians. But I did actually do the 1-20, you know, detail section, you know, through all the new glass.
And Aintree Racecourse, again, for those who don't know, it's where the Grand National's held.
Oh yeah,
in our famous city. Yeah. So yeah, possibly the best stand in the best race course.
Yeah,
in the world.
There you go. Don't need to thank for that.
Back onto the platform then. So in terms of, obviously, we've sort of started this because we've been out of uni 10 years now ourselves. We recognise the things that we've needed. And then as practice owners, we've also recognised that skills gap, even more so from university to practice life. So we've wanted to try and help bridge that gap with it. But just touch on a little bit more about the objectives for academia and sort of where you want to go with it. What do we want to get out of it personally in terms of, you know, giving back?
And are we saying platform at first? And then we are going to discuss this, aren't we, as well? So
yeah.
Platform first. Go on. So what would you say the objectives of the platform are, yeah?
Well, it's ever growing, isn't it? It grows all the time. So at its core, it's the tutorials, and that was born out of the need from getting new employees. They would come and asking the same questions. It grew out of that. Then we just started articulating that in a folder on our server, and then we thought, you know what, this could be really useful for other people. And then it sort of organically, we're getting new ideas all the time, aren't we? We introduced the downloads area and you know, the store, because the amount of times me and Adam have needed this stuff we sell on the store,
yeah,
and it's not in one place. So effectively, Arcademia is bringing it all in one place, and that's the key to it. And then we're discussing other areas like access to consultants. That was what we discussed recently, wasn't it? Where, like, at the minute, and it's not well advertised on the site, you can actually book time in with Adam in his calendar. But we were saying, why can't we do that for every other consultant? So I would use that now in my career. Like, eventually, if we have like a highways consultant and I book half an hour at a time, it goes in the calendar and we say, is this road look right to you? You know, just really informally, or like an engineer, what type of spans?
So this is really important for those who are just stepped into practice life and they're now being given some responsibilities of going and getting these quotes or getting the high-level advice at appraisal stage. Mm. They might need a book of contacts because they might not have them yet.
Yeah.
And we're going to eventually
Jack basically gave me my starting off point with the book of contacts. Alan, transport, Richard planning, all that sort of stuff. You actually had a better book of contacts than I did.
And the difference with that was me and Adam were initially from big multidisciplinary practices where it was all in-house. So you had an engineer in-house, you had a landscaper in-house.
Yeah.
When you go to a smaller practice, which is more akin to being a smaller business or, you know, like not on these big global frameworks, you do need to find your transport guy, your engineer, your tree guy. You need to know all that. but it's not just finding them, it's then having a relationship where you like them and you can work with them and stuff. And that's probably not something that you need day one coming out of uni, but it happens organically over time.
It'd be mightily impressive though.
Yeah.
It'd be mightily impressive. As I say, that's something we're planning on rolling out. If someone came out of university, if someone started with our practice, and when we say come out of university, there's two steps as an architect, there's degree and there's master's. So you wouldn't expect it for degree, post-degree, but post-master's, if someone started with us as a part two and said, you know what, don't worry, I've got a plan application there or a pre-application that I want to do, and I've already got contacts for that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I can get your drainage strategy. I can get your transport assessment. I would be absolutely blown away.
Yeah.
That'd be unbelievable.
Yeah.
That'd be absolutely unbelievable. That would put them a year, I think, ahead on their road to the part three.
Yeah.
And it's knowing that you need them, because initially when you come out of uni, you think you can do everything. So
yeah.
You start trying to be an engineer, be a landscape architect,
yeah.
But you're not covered PI-wise to do it.
Yeah.
So in effect,
it's a massive lesson.
It's a valuable lesson you can get wrong if you don't put the right onus on the right people.
Yeah. So obviously they're strong objectives in terms of like what we want to offer from the platform. But is it fair to say that this has now become a real passion project as well for us in terms of
academia?
Yeah. Like in terms of, you know, so, as you say, there's new ideas coming all the time and stuff like that. Like it is starting to become that passion project. And
So while Jack was mentioning stuff, obviously I was just thinking of a few things in terms of objectives, and You've reminded me of a second one there. So the number one is the one-stop shop mentality. YouTube's amazing. I follow some top YouTubers. I still use their stuff now. So let's have that right. You know what I mean? We're not trying to displace that. But equally, there are a lot of poor YouTube lessons out there and a lot of generic ones as well. Ours are dead specific to actual daily life as an architect. We cut through all the crap and just get straight to the point of that. So ours is one objective of the platform is it gives you it all in one place. That is massive. That for a reasonable monthly price. So I'm just spat everywhere. But then the other one about the passion behind it was we felt that as I touched on earlier, we felt we were robbed of a distinction.
You felt we were robbed.
You're the one who got 69% and a 70 was a distinction. So don't you know you were robbed as well. So there's a lot of politics at university. There's also a lot of, you stood there at uni going, it's so hands-off.
Because they want you to be independent, don't they, totally?
Yeah, but I think it's a little early or a little too far that way, do you know what I mean? So it's incredibly hands-off. Yes, okay, so fair enough. The tutors are trying to build an independence. I'm actually a big fan of how harsh the crits are, because that does give you what I see in ways on the chest, what have you. You do need that in practice, yes. But you aren't half stood there thinking, why am I... by the way, if you hear me belly rumbling, I've had a little brechy. you do feel quite hard done to when you're at uni. You just do. I had a tutor that you ask him a question, it basically is the answer was, and you know what I mean, the answer was, if a tree falls in the forest, does it make any noise? You go, no, I just want to know what the size of a stair is. do you know what I mean? So the passion behind it is, me personally feel like I've got a bit of an axe to grind with how poor some of my teachings were in terms of, you know, the teachings I receive.
Yeah. I'm just getting the next topic up, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, no, look, you know, we've got to have some bits written down.
For the record, I love John Moores University.
Someone's after a job at John Moores after he's ready to pack in.
So the objectives of the podcast, right, the absolute number one is we can't teach everything through recording your screen. Because that is a limited scope. Although, you know, the most recent course we've just released is on architectural design in practice. It kind of explains how you deal with developers, budget constraints, planning regs, and all that sort of stuff. This is a great platform, probably the only platform really, to flesh all stuff like that out and to touch on the softer skills that you need to be a top architect, because it's probably only 20% in it.
When you say softer skills, what exactly do you mean by softer skills?
Well, let me chip in, because I'll use you as an example. So we, at degree level, we both learned AutoCAD. We both get jobs in different multi-disc practices. Adam's practice uses MicroStation. Mine uses AutoCAD. I'm sweet. I'm sound. Adam is having a meltdown, aren't you? Because
you need to learn.
He's got a job in a massive practice that basically is tied his hands behind his back because he can't draw. So
it's hard enough, isn't it? It's hard enough starting a new firm as it is.
So then you're having a meltdown, aren't you? Going, I need to learn this MicroStation.
Yeah.
And basically you did. And you learnt it via loads of different ways, YouTube, whatever.
Internal.
Internal, asking people in the office. And in effect, this is a narrative of that later down the line, isn't it? Because you will get into a practice where you get asked to do something and you can't do it.
Yeah.
And we're basically not giving you a cheat sheet, but we're giving you the advice you need in one place to go and do it.
Yeah. But that's still about the platform, isn't it? Because we were touching on what this podcast is covering.
Yeah, I've went off piece, haven't I?
No. But what you touched on was important. I came to you panicking on one of our lunch times, didn't I?
Yeah.
Panicking about how do I get over this? Now, when I mentioned about softer skills and stuff, although you did go back to platform-based stuff, that's a very important thing that no one of our members at the minute is fully utilising. If you're worried about anything, absolutely worried about anything, just drop us an email. Drop us an email and we can set up a video call, anything. We can really take that anxiety away. But in terms of other objectives for the podcast, obviously this one's an introductory one and we're going to move into the... each one's going to be topic based, isn't it? So they're going to be a bit more structured after this one.
Yeah, bear with us.
Yeah. We're not too structured though. It's quite relaxed. But the point of the podcast is covering off the things that we couldn't possibly cover off through screen recording or YouTube or what have you. It is literally about scenario based things. You know, if you've got a planning application refused or you've got a tricky consultant you're dealing with, I've worked with some engineers who are quite quick to try and embarrass the architect because the architect's the lead consultant.
Yeah.
So other kind of sub-consultants are always trying to embarrass the architect and stuff like that. This podcast is going to give you all that insight into how to navigate that.
Yeah. And we'll have some fun along the way.
No. No, there'll be no fun here. Yeah.
I'll be forcing you to answer all the questions as well.
I can see Adam in that seat next week, to be honest.
I'm the answerer. This is perfect.
You're the asker, I'm the answerer.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go Q&A time. So we'll have a weekly Q&A where you, the audience, through our Instagram or other channels, will be able to suggest some questions that you want the guys to answer. And we'll go through any difficult topics that you're going through at the time. I will start today's off because we haven't got one prepared as yet. So I'll start us off for today. And I'll go along the theme of what we've been going with today already a little bit and ask you guys what you think the main difference is from student life to practice life.
Go on, I'll jump in. So in one word, clients. You don't have clients in uni.
A client's worse than tutors, would you say?
About the same.
Similar representation, but it's how to navigate the complexities of different clients because it's personalities and one size doesn't fit all. And it just takes experience. So my answer would be clients. You don't have clients in uni.
But what differences, and sorry, I am doing your job here a little bit, but what differences does a client bring to a tutor? You mentioned earlier about obviously, budgets and all that sort of stuff.
So for example, if you're in uni and you do some crazy building that's like 100 stories, the tutor will say double the size.
Yeah, it's encouraged.
The client will say half the size, make it smaller.
Yeah.
And
ambitions are totally different, aren't they?
You get your wings clipped. So it's navigating. It's a tightrope between still producing a really good building and pleasing the client.
Yeah, matching their expectations. Yeah.
Spot on. My one, although they teach you presentation skills through the crit setup, portfolio reviews, project reviews and all that sort of stuff, they still don't fully cover off how to deal with people. So you can still present a project, yes, but that is still a small percentage of what you've got to do in terms of I mean, one of our big bugbears is hesitation for answering the phone in the office. You know, we still answer the phone first, don't we? Because there's just that little bit of hesitation to answer the phone because the juniors in our studio are nervous whether they'll get embarrassed if, you know, if it's a technical question or stuff like that. So there's no way to teach that. And I think we can, through this, this is one of the softer skills I mentioned. I think we can teach that.
Yeah.
That might be, again, another topic. So it's those areas that allow you to win work, charisma, confidence, all that sort of stuff. Win work through networking events, how to pitch for a job in practice and all that sort of stuff. So I'd say that, you know, that it just isn't taught, flat out isn't taught.
Yeah.
How to really navigate as an architect and with other consultants and all that sort of stuff.
It's born out of other life skills as well, isn't it? So applying that personally to us, we're not bothered about getting the phone because we've worked in retail jobs where you're dealing with the public all day.
Yeah.
Whereas we find a few other people we take on who probably haven't had as much experience with the public.
Yeah.
It affects them still later down the line.
I think you find sometimes it's social skills and it comes sometimes from a hierarchy. So if you're a part one or a part two in an architecture office, you might be scared. You might actually be worried that, oh, I don't want to pick the phone up to an important client or a consultant and I might not understand what they're asking me or stuff. But actually, your practice managers want the opposite. They actually want you to answer those calls and they want you to show the confidence because the only way you're going to get over that social anxiety sometimes of the hierarchy again of things it is by talking to those people and by developing a relationship.
It's learning like deflection techniques so you don't have to commit to absolutely anything. And when you go pick on the phone up.
What's the motto you always, you always hold a little post-it note up, don't you? When someone's asking me for a fee over the phone, it's...
Or Adam's about to promise a deadline for in the morning. We just say, we will get back to you.
Yeah, we will get back to you is a great phrase.
If you're going to take something away from this today, it's... when you're on the spot, that is your answer.
Yeah.
And that, for me personally, got me over a lot of anxiety points in my career.
Yeah.
If you don't know the answer, don't pretend. Yeah. Just say, I don't know now as well. That doesn't show a lack of knowledge. You just say, I don't know now. I'll look into it for you and I'll get back to you. That gets you out of pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Pretty much every situation.
Yeah.
Good shout.
Great. Okay. We'll move into the last part of the podcast. Top threes.
I forgot what this one was then. Yeah.
So again, each week, each month, we'll on the podcast do a top three. Today's top three. Again.
One a month, by the way, is it? Because we haven't said that.
Yeah. We'll try.
So it's one a month. I've enjoyed this though. So I do weeklies.
Today's top three is what is your top three things students need to succeed? And it can't be academia.
No, and the intention isn't trying to be a shameless plug because we do genuinely believe that what we're bringing is it does help. But go on, what would you say?
Well, I had this planned out in my head before we started, but I forgot. But what I would say is, you need an intense work ethic to succeed as an architecture student because it's not like many of the other courses. So you will be working all night.
Yeah.
5 nights on the run.
Obviously I've seen that with you guys. When we were in university, used to come round and see you and Adam up 4 a.m, drinking cans of Monster, Red Bull, whatever.
I don't think Red Rooster,
Monster didn't exist back then, did it?
We might get a sponsorship off Monster.
No, this is
Coca Noodles and Monster.
That's what we live
diet, isn't it?
Now, sadly it is. And this is probably the most prominent sort of thing in the industry now. The toxicity of our culture as architects. It isn't helped at university. It isn't. It's almost encouraged. It's almost celebrated. You know, people were bragging, weren't they? I haven't slept for 2 days and I've still got, you know, what have you. That does need addressing. And in practice, again, the way things are going with bill costs and all that sort of stuff, developers are only wanting things sooner as well. So that's something that we will actually, I think, tackle as well.
Yeah. And because of that, because of the intense work ethic you need to love it because you will get found out. You're not going to work for 24, 64, 70 hours without sleep if you don't love it. You'll pack it in.
Yeah.
And I think that is rooted out as you progress effectively.
And okay, so that's a good two. That's a a passion for architecture.
Thick skin.
Intense work ethic and thick skin.
A thick skin because them reviews that are like getting punched in the face.
Well, as you say, when you've been up for 5 nights straight, you know, pulling 18-hour shifts and then someone comes
five
here
nights
and
straight
says,
a bit much.
Yeah, no, I think 3 was our record. So yeah. you stay awake for 3 nights, then you go into the review and you can't string a sentence together.
Yeah.
And you think you work great, you go in confident and you just get absolutely annihilated.
That was one of the biggest things that I thought when I was studying architecture. The injustice of it really got me. So like I remember on one of the first projects that we did, it was a transformation project and I spent a lot of time on lampposts that transformed into beds for the homeless. Yeah. So they had somewhere to sleep, et cetera, et cetera. It took me ages. And then famously, we came in the next day and some guy turned up with a sheet of A4 paper. He folded it into an aeroplane and threw it. Now, it was genius.
No. But that's the difference.
It took him like 10 genius. Minutes to do that project. I'd worked all night on mine and I got a moderate mark and he got the top mark in the class. And straight away, I just thought, this is so objective. Yeah. You know, one person can view something to the next. And again, that happens with tutors.
It's a very subjective course, but equally, that exposed us at the time to a different way of thinking. Because I was like... Geez, I went on to that. Yeah. That would get me the top mark. I think I'd done an iron board that turned into a basketball hoop.
Yeah,
load of shite. I spent probably a week colouring in on it, and this guy does a paper aeroplane in 10 minutes. Yeah. And justifiably so, he got the best marks because his creative thinking was exceptional in that scenario.
Good answers. Ads?
Well, so that my one was going to be around kind of narrative and a different way of thinking. But we mentioned work ethic, and I do want to be clear in that we're not trying to encourage that horrendous way of going about uni. We in our run-in to the completion of the masters, we pretty much slept every other night and we were absolutely knackered. There was times when we were working out of it. We were in my mum and dad's, we were working out of the second bedroom, and there'd be times when he wouldn't see me for a few hours because I just fell asleep just in the other room. I might just went to the room for something and I just hit the deck and that isn't a healthy thing. So genuinely, I believe what we're bringing to the table with academia is something that will massively help with that.
Yeah.
Make you more efficient and whatever.
If I could go back and do it, I'd restructure how I'd done uni so I wouldn't do through the night because you don't get anything done, do you? I would try and working hours.
We call it stealing happiness from the next day, don't we? The later you stay up, the worse you are the next day.
The happiness credit card. You're putting it on the happiness credit card.
Exactly. So again, these are naturally the points I was going to bring up. So number one is time management. And lots of dead vague things to sort of start with.
No, but it's important.
But time management is try to get into the mentality of almost that kind of nine to six sort of structure your days around that.
Yeah.
I've got a weekly planner and my little rule is I don't look at any more than one project per day. I'll do more than one thing per day, but I don't let my mind drift outside of one project per day.
Yeah.
That might be 5 schemes a week, what have you.
Yeah.
But I try and focus on one thing a day. So number one, that was the question, wasn't it? It was about what can students now, you know, top three things a student can do now to improve the chances. So number one is proper time management with a nice Excel spreadsheet, plan every day, and give yourself a rest day. That could be the weekend or what have you, but sometimes there is no denying that when you come up to a deadline, you have to put the extra shift in. Even though I'm not encouraging the extra hours, it is just a truth. It's a harsh truth that to achieve anything great, you do have to go above and beyond.
It's from experience, that, isn't it? And for you guys, you know that from experience. And I suppose, even though we're not trying to encourage it, that might help a few people who are in the struggle to just hear them words and to know that, you know, it's not
It's a necessary evil.
To put that further under the microscope, that sentence, like knowing when you finished, you can actually be finished to a level that you could then spend another 4 hours on
finish,
a drawing,
and
it won't show up at a 1-50 drawing. Yeah. So it's just drawing a line under when you're finished because you're never really finished as an architecture student.
What is it? Perfection gets in the way of progress.
Yeah.
And it does.
So sometimes you just have to pick a point and you say, right, this drawing's done and I will rescue it in Photoshop. And by the time it's in your presentation, you won't notice what's happened.
Line thicknesses and everything, mask loads, don't you?
Yeah.
So number one is good time management, but then the actual advice is structure your days and give yourself one large thing a day. So in uni, you're only working on one project anyway. So it could be floor plans, sections and what have you. Yeah. That's number one.
Good.
Number two is that high level of thinking. And to capture that in a word is narrative. Really get an understanding of what a narrative is for a project. I used to confuse that with a building's program. So a building's program is its use. That's it. Its function. Is it labs? Is it music? You know what I mean? Is it theatre? You know, what have you? That's the building's program. And then the associated spaces around, you know, what makes that a functioning building. The narrative is the purpose it's serving. And the best way to think of narrative for the uni project is what's the problem that your project is trying to solve. So me and Jack, we got top marks for one of our master plan schemes because at the time there was a lot of talk of how the depletion of certain insects in the world and all that sort of stuff, the depletion of that was depleting pollination and then it was depleting food supply in the world. That was the narrative. We set out a master plan to solve that. And it was just top marks. It was absolutely incredible. Every single design decision we made after that was born from the narrative. Yeah. The program,
it's authentic, isn't it?
Exactly.
What I'd add to that is, and it's something I do now in practice, do your intense designing and thinking in the morning. And you're doing it in the afternoon. It's real.
How many Jack done? How about five or six?
Yeah, no. You're just expanding on yours.
Top six.
I genuinely didn't think I'd get to speak. So, with Adam, so I'm just quite pleased I've actually said a couple of sentences.
Okay.
Well, but go on, sorry. So what was that?
In effect, you can't solve really complex architectural problems at 4:30.
You're tired, aren't you?
You're tired. You've had your dinner. So what do I often say to you? I'm sitting there and something will take me 2 hours. That will take me 10 minutes in the morning. So I will just bench it till the morning and solve it in 10 minutes in the morning.
And if you've still got time in your day, turn that to production.
Yeah.
You can kind of do brain dead, just production.
Yeah.
You know, get all your doors in.
Yeah. Thinking in the morning, production in the afternoon.
There you go. Yeah, perfect.
Oh, good.
Are we done?
And your last one?
No, right. You've done six or seven, so I still get me third in. Which I'll be honest with you, I haven't quite thought of.
So what was that last point?
So just, you know, you've done a lot of sort of mental type stuff there, you know, in terms of the prep and stuff. One thing that I had to learn quickly and harshly was drawing. So for those out there who've got a real passion for architecture, but might not be so good at art, I've seen you two sketch. You two could draw. Well, Adam, you are quite harsh on yourself with sketching, but you are good at it.
Yeah, but Jack is better. Jack actually put me off a little bit with his drawing.
Yeah, because Jack's really, really good at art as well. So, you know, you guys could already draw when you got to uni, which obviously must have been a bit of pressure of it. Do you think that's a key skill now for students? So if I'm someone in sixth form or college and I don't really, or I'm not really that confident at sketching and drawing at the moment, go on a drawing course, because those do exist. You can go and learn and how to draw and how to do things.
It's crucial, but it can be overcome. So I could draw, like put an apple on a table and I could draw that. It's the technical aspect, which you don't appreciate when you start uni. So line weights are the key thing. When you're drawing a building, if your line weights don't work, it looks awful.
And what does line weights, what does that even mean? You know, like
So in effect, a plan of a building is a cut through a building. So it gets described as, if you say you've got a cake and you cut through it, you take it off, that is the plan of the building. The section is cutting it the other way. So line weights are, your drawing really needs to pop in.
So is it the heavy items are in a heavier line?
It's a way to distinguish.
It's a way to distinguish different items.
Elements that you want to distinguish.
Walls would be a thicker line weight. Yeah. Windows thinner, stairs thinner, because you're looking down at stairs.
Furniture even thinner.
Thinner. And if you do, just for example, if you've done everything on a really thick line weight, it'd look terrible. Yeah. If you've done it on a really thin line weight, it'd look terrible. Yeah. You wouldn't know what the prominent items are.
So learning those lessons now would be important.
The best way to learn them, because it's lost to a degree in CAD, is via hand drawing. So that's why they did keep it.
So that's what I was about to say. It's probably not a course we'll do. We probably will touch on hand drawn and maybe through YouTube channel or something like that. The reason we probably won't do a full course on it is because that is one thing that I did get a lot from when I was at uni was, and I'm a big, big believer of it, before you run away and jump into the computer, learning line weight and technical drawing by hand using those nightmare rotring pens. They leak everywhere and stuff. But it teaches you so many things, you know, like discipline and all, like your patience.
Yeah. Well, you snap a nib at 4 in the morning.
And it's like...
it's yeah. the end of the world.
No. But that still teaches you so much. Yeah. So I start there. Start with the drawing by hand, the technical drawing by hand, by the way. I like the way it touched on sketching and stuff. The technical drawing aspect, I think, is more easily learned, if that's the word or whatever, or more easily taught. The sketching thing is a little bit more natural, I think you've sort of got that, or you haven't, but the technical stuff you can learn. And once you learn how to do that by hand, drawing it on computer just comes quite naturally then. So yeah. call that my number three, even though it's probably his eighth. call that my number three, which
you
is
can have that one.
Learn how to draw by hand first. Yeah. Do not, in year one of university, don't rush away with the computer. The computer will soon start to creep in.
And I'd imagine it hasn't changed too much, and these do still.
I hope to do. I hope to still teach it. And I'm just jumped into Revit, for example.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we can almost end there. I think we've done well. It's gone a little bit longer probably than we thought it would, but we've done quite well, I think. Yeah. One thing to mention is make sure you check out the website. We didn't want to make this too salesy, but if you've liked the podcast and you like the sound of what Arcademia is about, then check us out, www.arcademia.com. And we'll tag our socials and we'll tag everything below the post. Hope that you want to join us for more of these chats. We'll put out some more topics on Instagram specifically as well, so make sure you're getting involved on some of the story posts there. Thanks for listening. Anything from you guys?
No, we just wanted to touch on the idea that we... You know, the future episodes will be topic-based now. So this is just a broad one. Future episodes will be topic-based. And we will start to introduce some guests as well. We'll bring in other consultants. I think that's important, isn't it? So, happy days. Good. Buzzing with that.
And, well done, guys. Yeah. First one done.
Spot on. Well in.